support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
Hey, good morning. It's JC here from Gibson, the chief guitar tuner, but otherwise known as the CEO of Gibson Guitars here in Nashville.
How cool. Curious about you. How did it happen? As a kid, you know, where were you?
Yeah.
Guitar dude?
Yeah, I grew up in this really interesting family dynamic. And, you know, at the time you don't know you're in it, but when you look back, you see what you were in. I was really fortunate. My dad was naval aviator. My mom was this free spirit from Nova Scotia, Canada. And the two of them, apart from many bonds, one of their bonds was music. And
my mom bought you your first guitar?
More so, there was instruments in the house. And my mom's had her Epiphone guitar in our house since I was born, and my dad played the banjo. And so while he was flying, off the Intrepid in the 60s, when he came back home, my mom and dad would find themselves at music festivals. And so we kind of grew up in this music-inspired family dynamic, but at the same time, living all over the world, my parents would have these parties, and at the end of the night, the guitars and the banjos would come out, and it was just this sense of community mm-hmm. and enjoyment, and music's always been sort of woven into our family fabric.
So as you launched out of the family and went out on your own, where did you go? What did you...
So growing up in a few different countries, you know, obviously with a military family, and then when I finished college, I decided with my girlfriend we'd go to London. You know, we said, let's go for a year. And we'll see. And if the worst is, we come back. But we ended up staying for 10. But what was really interesting is my wife now, who was my girlfriend at the time, I went to London, and a few weeks later, she showed up, and she shows up with a guitar case. And she gets off the plane, and I'm like, well, she plays a little bit, but what's with the guitar? And she says, well, remember you lent me some money to travel around Europe last summer? Instead of just paying you back and we'd go to the bar and drink it, she said, I decided to get you a guitar. And that was really cool. And she, right there at Heathrow Airport, there it was, my first real guitar that I owned, apart from the guitar I made in shop class in high school, which when everyone was making a cutting board for their parents for Christmas, I decided to make a Flying V guitar. And I did.
Wow.
So whether it was my parents and music festivals, mm-hmm. making a Flying V guitar, my girlfriend, now wife of 28 years, giving me my first real guitar.
Was it an Epiphone?
It was not, but at the time, you know, it was everything I wanted in terms of a guitar, and Epiphone's been in my family forever, and my proudest moment, sort of flashing forward 50 years plus later, was when my mom came to Nashville when I first moved here with Gibson. And I got her her first Gibson with her initials on the truss rod cover.
Oh, wow.
So I kind of brought it full circle back around. And now her two prized possessions are her Epiphone from the 60s and her Gibson from this era.
How awesome.
Yeah.
So again, rolling back, how did the collision happen with you and Gibson? And you get your guitar from your girlfriend.
Yeah.
What did you do with it?
Well, I still have the guitar. And, you know, it's a part of who I am and how I got into this whole craziness and awesome craziness. And but, you know, when I was in London, I played in a few bands. And we got a little bit of momentum going with the band and had the day job. And then I actually had a lot of momentum going on with my career. I was at M&M Mars, and I was on this really interesting program to sort of look at branding of the future. And this was in the 90s. And I had that intersection. Do we go and try to make it as musicians and tour and all that, or do I really believe in this notion of building brands and businesses and working with teams internationally and around the world? And I said to myself at the time, I can always play music, but this opportunity to shape brands and businesses and be international was really intriguing. So I chose that path. Looking back, it's been an amazing path. I started at M&M Mars and, you know, Snickers and all that. And
so you've been to the factory in Cleveland, right?
Oh, yeah. I know all of that. But it was just an amazing starting point. And in the 90s, we decided to sponsor the Olympics, a big event with Snickers. And when I was at the Olympics, I meet these cool guys at Salomon Skis and Snowboards and all that. And I ended up joining Salomon back in the early 90s, and it was an amazing experience too. And so then fast forward a few years later, Salomon emerged with Adidas. The CEO of Adidas says, hey, I was living in Europe still, and he said, would you consider being the president CEO of Salomon North America? And I was like, consider it. It's considered it done. And so that was in 2000, mm-hmm. and so I moved to Portland, Oregon with Adidas, and then...
Okay, time out. Here we are. Evolution, the trajectory of your life. Are you parallel playing guitar
Absolutely.
The whole time?
A great question.
Do you have
yeah.
little
yeah.
groups?
Music has always been part of it. And so even when I was at Solomon the Sports Company, I was mm-hmm. always inspired by music and musicians and always playing. Sometimes I can get up on the stage if it's a fundraiser or something and play with some really fun folks. And then I was at Solomon. We did a startup called Keen Footwear in Portland, and Solomon moved to Utah. I stayed there, and we did this startup. So music featured heavily. And I remember one night we had this great room at Keen Footwear, this big open room for the community. And one weekend I went and I bought all the music equipment to start a band for the Keen Jam Band. Monday, everyone showed up, and there's drums, and there's keyboards, and there's guitars, and I was like, we're going to make music happen here at Keen, and we did. So
cool.
I was even able
including
to...
Including
me. I loved it. And it's just something special happens when you get people who have either never played, and they get to sit down, whether it's with a maraca or with a bass guitar and be in the band, or for really experienced, talented musicians to know that music is part of their company culture, too. Like, who would have thought from mm-hmm. footwear and outdoor you could play music at the yeah. company? So that was amazing. And we went on to do Keen Fest, uh-huh. and it was a festival, musicians for Keen Footwear. It was an amazing movement. We had nothing. We had this really crazy idea with a shoe that could protect your toes and breathe and all those things. And mm-hmm. then, so music was part of that. And then I got the call from Levi's, and that was the big one. And I've been wearing Levi's all my life, and they were in 2012 really trying to reimagine themselves for the future, and sort of they'd taken their leadership for granted. Everyone knows Levi's, but it was sort of aging gracefully with the 501 guy, and we're yeah. like, well, we love him, but what about the next generation? So I decided to pack up the bags and move to California in San Francisco,
wow.
the home of Levi's, and yeah. as the brand president. And it was an amazing era. And over the next 6 years, from 2012 onwards, we rebuilt Levi's the right way, connecting. And then oh. at the same time, if you could picture my office there, just outside of my office, and people will remember this, I had drums, keyboards, guitars. We did many festivals. Obviously, Levi's is synonymous with music, and whether you're at Woodstock, where mm-hmm. I think probably Levi's had 97% market share, and the other 3% of people were naked, so call it 100%. But so music's always been, you know, synonymous with me, but also I've tried to make it synonymous with the brands and the businesses. Mm-hmm. And then fast forward out of Levi's in 2018, I got the call to help resurrect arguably one of the most iconic brands, not even just in music, one of the most iconic brands in America and mm-hmm. around the world, and that's Gibson.
That's so cool. And that was a no-brainer for you, right?
It was, I gotta tell you, at the moment, like, things were going amazing at Levi's mm-hmm. and the team there is awesome and the family's awesome, and we were doing big things like building Levi's Stadium and really reimagining, and the team have done such an amazing job, and the CEO there, Chip Berg, has been amazing. He's now, it's knocking on his 10-year anniversary, and he's really rebuilt mm-hmm. Levi's the right way.
But something got you.
Yeah, oh, well, if someone said, hey, JC, if you could combine your absolute passion in life with a purpose of rebuilding and something that needs attention, above mm-hmm. average attention, not just go in and try to keep it going. And, you know, let's go there. I mean, in May of 2018, Gibson was declared bankrupt.
Wow.
Not almost, not kind
in
of.
What year?
In 2018.
Wow.
In May of 2018, the company declared bankruptcy. And that's when I was sitting at Levi's and I read this. And as a musician, first I was sad, mm-hmm. then I got mad. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how does this happen?
Yeah.
Who let this happen? This is a brand that I know and I love and I play.
Mm-hmm.
And so I connected with the team at KKR.
Was that part of your temptation, that challenge?
I've taken brands and built and crafted mm-hmm. and steered and shaped, but I've never taken something that was really broken, especially in an industry that I'd been in it personally, but not professionally, the music mm-hmm. industry. I mean, let's go there. Nashville is
yeah.
one of the coolest spots in the world right now. So mm-hmm. Gibson, music, Nashville, CEO, challenge. I said, let's go there. And the
So
team,
at that moment yeah, in time, you had no fear?
You know, I didn't have fear.
Questions?
Yeah. You go from, I think it's a human dynamic. Often when you get confronted with a choice or an opportunity, mm-hmm. first thing you say, well, why would I do that? And very quickly, I went to, like, why wouldn't I do that? And then very quickly, like, if I don't do this, I'll regret it for the rest of my life. It was a hard choice, but mm-hmm. I can tell you, I left an amazing team behind at Levi's who have gone on to do amazing things. And at the same time, day one, I showed up here. In fact, day zero, the day before I joined, we got the whole company together at the cannery down the road here, a classic old venue. And we said, you know what? The SOS sign went up at Gibson. And I had a piece of cardboard with SOS on it. That was what I call Canadian PowerPoint. And it was just a box and three letters. And I said, this SOS is a distress sign. It went up. I'm here. And SOS stands for Save Our Sound. We're going to save the sound of Gibson. Cool. And then we went on to talk about SOS being share of sound. And because if you look back in history, Gibson's almost 130 years old. It's synonymous with creating an inspiring sound for 130 years. Recorded sound, live sound, songwriters, writing on Gibsons. And I said, this is sound worth saving, but it's also this notion of share of sound. The sound of Gibson matters. Mm-hmm. And so the SOS went from Save Our Sound to Share of Sound. And in the last 3 years, rebuilt Gibson the right way, I believe. And you're sitting in the Gibson garage right now. And I think this is an absolute testament to the rebirth of Gibson.
When you came on board 2018, you're inheriting a basically bankrupt company.
Yep.
So as you analyzed and deconstructed and reconstructed, what was that first epiphanous moment where you went, I know how I can do this?
Well, the first one, and I've got to go there. I mean, taking a company through bankruptcy, it's a technical financial journey, but it's also a cultural journey and a commercial journey. All these things have to happen just to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, bankruptcy is a moment in time to protect a company, to give it a little bit of time to figure itself out. And I have to give...
So Chapter 11.
Absolutely. And I have to give real credit to KKR, the private equity company, where, it's, you know, we all know private equity companies. They come in, they do different things. These guys were absolute
but
experts.
Sometimes they eviscerate.
You're absolutely right. So one of my, you know, questions and, you know, quite frankly, concerns was, like, what are the intentions here? Well, from the very first time I met KKR and Nat Zilka, who is our chairman, I followed his footsteps. He followed mine. He's a musician. He's played in bands. His passion, he's a collector. He plays his guitar every day. And when I met him, we talked more about guitar and what we could do with Gibson than about KKR and private equity. I realized that there were these aligned interests, both personally, and then I watched these guys in action, and they literally took Gibson from they ran it through what I call the obstacle course of bankruptcy. And they said, in November 1st, 2018, we're coming out, JC. You're the new CEO. We will give you all the resources, insight, and support necessary to succeed. And I can tell you they have. And from that day onwards, day one, that's what we've been doing. And so, to your question, it didn't take much. I just started, even before I joined, I started reading social media, everything. And basically what I understood was that everyone loved the Gibson brand.
So just the name.
Totally. And they loved the guitars that they had, but they didn't like the company.
Uh-huh.
And so everyone had this hope that Gibson, the company, would be equally synonymous with being iconic as the guitars played by artists across generations and genres. So then I dug a little deeper, and you could see that people were concerned about the quality of the guitars. They're not what they used to be. Oh, the prices were getting too high. Dealers didn't have good relationships. Artists loved their Gibson guitar, but they didn't really like the company. So this was all gleaned just through talking to people and going in and out of guitar stores.
So you turned the model literally inside out.
Yeah. And, well, the very first thing was, I remember, apart from gathering everyone and saying, I had 500 people in the cannery almost 3 years ago to the day. Honestly, they didn't know if they were coming there to get fired or to get told who the new owners were. And here's some guy from Levi's showing up with a piece of cardboard and said, let's save the sound. And there were a few skeptics, but then we really set about it. The number one focus was quality.
Mm-hmm.
People expect the quality of a Gibson guitar, which has always been made in the USA, to be of the best quality. And so I said, guys, we're going to reduce the number of guitars we make for the foreseeable future because our fingerprints are on these new ones. We're the new Gibson. And if guitars go out that don't have the quality and attention that they expect, it's on us now. It's not on the path. It's on us. So we did that. And then we started looking at really, like, interesting things in quality, like the lighting in our crafteries. We call them the crafteries, which are our factories where the craftsmen will make them. We looked at lighting. We looked at air pressure. We looked at how many times we touch a guitar. And within weeks, the team themselves came up with quality improvement ideas that we could start to measure. Mm-hmm. And so we've done that.
Give me an example. A couple of examples.
So I'll give you an example. We had, if you just look at your house and look, next time go and see, how many different watts of lighting do you have in your house? So we had sporadic lighting. So all of a sudden, if it was a darker corner and there's something wrong with the guitar when you're making it and you don't see it, chances are you don't see it till it goes out the door into a dealer and into your hands, and then someone looks at it with different lighting and says, how can these guys miss that? So we implemented a complete new lighting install with high wattage LED lighting so that it was consistent and the right light. Air pressure. I learned more about negative and positive air pressure when you're in an environment with
in
wood.
In the spray booth?
Yeah, well, watch this. You're sanding and building guitars by hand.
Right.
There's particulates in the air, and it's dust, and it's what we call trash. It's air trash, and it settles on guitars. And as you're painting them and that dust settles, guess what? You can't buff that out. So we started putting in new pressure systems, you know, those doors that would be sealed. You open, it closes, you go into the next one. So we really compartmentalized each of our departments so that we could significantly reduce or eliminate trash. And so light, particulates in the air. And then the other one was we were touching the guitars about 112 times throughout. Every time someone touches it, it can get dinged, it can bang. So we came up with better ways to move guitars around, reducing the need to move them around as much by getting smarter with it. And we also invested in the right balance of automation where it could improve quality, and then craftsmanship training where the human hand could finish it.
And all of your physical manufacturing of Gibson is in the United States, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. So we have our, right here in Nashville, we have our custom shop, which there's about 100 craftsmen and craftswomen making the arguably the best guitars in the world, and it's not an argument for me. I fundamentally believe that even today we're making some of the best guitars we've ever made, including the addition of the Murphy Lab. We have our Gibson USA facility here in Nashville, which makes all of our solid body and our ES guitars, just 5 miles from here, and there's about 300 folks there. And then our acoustics are all made in Bozeman, Montana. Just an amazing team out there where we're embarking on doubling the capacity and adding real investment into our crafteries.
And somebody was telling me that the reason you went to Montana was environmental, atmospheric, of the geographic location.
Yeah. So we
humidity.
You
know,
you're absolutely right. We deal a lot with humidity. And when you're dealing with hardwoods, like mostly for solid body guitars, the humidity dynamics aren't as critical as they are when you're dealing with softer woods. Think of Sitka spruce and think of some of the thinner wood material we're using on acoustics. And so a lot of our wood comes from the Pacific Northwest. And at the same time, you have amazing craftsmen and craftswomen out there in Bozeman as well. So it's a, you know, I think it's a good balance for us.
You're such a multitasker in that you can jump from one thing to another.
Yeah.
You literally are on an assembly line brainstorming a problem, but then your other part of your brain is processing financials, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And you're able to balance these, the literal multitask.
I would call it AFD. I'm making this up live, but it's attention, focus, and determination.
Yeah.
That's what it would be for me.
But again, it's that multiples, you know, and that if you didn't have that kind of...
But I think growing up, I mean, let's go back. I went to 11 different schools. I grew up, I was always the new kid. I was always in a position where, should I go and play music for a living or build brands? And so the other thing, I think, is that I've learned sometimes the hard way to be aggressively patient or patiently aggressive. And I know a lot of leaders come and they try to drive too much change too fast and they regret some of the decisions. And at the same time, a lot of leaders wait and wait and wait until it's too late, and then it's too late to change. And so I brought all of that experience for this role at Gibson to say, we know quality needs it, so let's aggressively pursue that. At the same time, we started rebuilding relationships with artists. And then we started rebuilding relationships with dealers. And so it was it took a little bit of time, but at the same time, there was a sense of urgency because Gibson deserved it. We had to make up for some lost time. In real terms, we've invested more in our crafteries in the last 3 years than in the previous 10 years combined. Our relationships with dealers have never been stronger. Our artists are loving it. They're just in love with what we're doing and now doing more signatures, more collaborations. And then there's a whole host of other opportunities we've opened up, which we can talk about.
It's been proven. I remember the former CEO of Costco. He created models that a lot of people thought couldn't be done. And they were all predicated on a greater good. How does that resonate with your mission, your philosophy of a cutting-edge corporation?
So again, I go back to, you know, the simple starting point. My mom and dad, we'd move to a known neighborhood, and my dad would get a case of beer, and my mom would make blueberry muffins, and we'd go and meet the neighbors. And we would say, you know, hey, Mom, Dad, why do we do this? And my dad said, well, if the first time you meet your neighbors for the wrong reasons, at least we got a reason to have the right reason, which there's the general talking. And my mom said, well, I know we might only be here for a few years, but what if we're here forever? What if we live here forever? Let's engage in the community. So I've taken that philosophy from when I was a little kid through everything I've done. And so
give me a practical, tangible here in Nashville.
Well, for a starting point, reimagined, we had a Gibson Foundation, and every company has a foundation. Mm-hmm. And over time, they tend to be more about the CEO's pet projects, you know, and they can get spread really, really thin. And so we looked at this, and I had folks calling me up going, hey, JC, we haven't met, but I'm from such and such a foundation, and Gibson promised me this. I'm saying, well, what do you guys do with music? They go, well, nothing. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry, but we're going to refocus back on music and musicians and the music community. Mm-hmm. So we did, and we relaunched Gibson Gives about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. And really the central purpose of that is making music matter one guitar at a time. Mm-hmm. And we committed to giving one guitar a day for 1,000 days. Within a year, we'd given out 3,000 guitars.
Wow.
And
that's an example. And who typically are the recipients?
So you could look at someone like Music Cares, which is a really great organization that supports musicians in times of need. So supporting them. Music Education, we gave just a few months ago about $300,000 of music equipment to the Nashville Public Schools. Unfortunately, when a situation comes up, it was only a year and a half ago when the tornado hit Nashville. Mm-hmm. And I woke up and, you know, you see the rubbish and the debris and the devastation through images. And there was this image, and I'll remember it for the rest of my life. It was this individual's everything they owned, and on top of it was a broken guitar. And I said, hey, team, wow. People lost. We can't maybe rebuild houses. That's mm-hmm. not what we do. And there's going to be people feeding people and supporting. But musicians, famous or not famous, lost their guitar. Let's get it. So we immediately said, if you lost a guitar in the tornado, let us know. And we've given out about 240 guitars to those that lost it.
In Nashville.
So Gibson Gives has been great in that there's notes for notes music programs. There's
Nets
little
in
kids
the schools.
Rock. Yeah, little kids rock. So Gibson Gives is now this powerful force of giving back to the music community mm-hmm. that, quite frankly, has given so much to Gibson over the years.
Let's talk about internally. Mm-hmm. Reimagining, as you probably had an evolution of how you treat your employees. Mm-hmm. Even 10 years ago, yep. Levi's versus
yep.
today.
Yep.
The landscape has changed.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, what are you doing? How are you building and keeping that loyalty and yeah. that employee pride?
First of all, hope is not a strategy. Hope is not a course of action. But hope is critical. If people say, well, I hope Gibson makes it. Well, I hope. No one's saying hope anymore. They're saying it's not a turnaround. We've turned around. Mm-hmm. And so what we're able to do with that is also in our crafteries, we introduce what we call the wage matrix, which is basically giving people a chance to understand how their skills and experience can apply to improving their life and their wages. Every year in the last 3 years, we've paid out an annual bonus. And even in year one, I showed up and said, hey, I called it the grand in the hand. You know what? Just for being here and getting through the obstacle course, and it was equal. Whether you were mm-hmm. the VP or whether you were sanding a guitar, I put a grand in everyone's hand and said,
wow.
Thanks for the journey. When the pandemic hit, end of March, a year and a half ago, on Sunday night when the mayor declared we're going to shut down Nashville, I called my team and said, I need to put $1,000 in everyone's bank account tomorrow. They said, well, JC, we can't do it that fast. I said, no, this is unequal times. People are going to wake up with the factory door shut and saying, what's next? How long? Mm-hmm. We didn't have the answers. So we literally put $1,000 in everyone's, before the government, before anyone. And, uh-huh. and again, $1,000, you know, grand in the hand, thank you for the obstacle course. The pandemic comes. You do a wage matrix. We've introduced better benefits for people, career opportunities, training and development. Each on his own is interesting. But when you put it together, what you get is this sense of pride. Mm-hmm. 3.5 years ago, when your neighbor said, what's going on at Gibson? There was only one answer. Well, you know, we're bankrupt. Mm-hmm. Today, when you ask someone what's going on at Gibson, you better have some time because mm-hmm. they will tell you, our teams will tell you, we launched the Gibson Garage. Slash was in our factory. We're making this new collection. Gibson TV is on. We're so proud to be at Gibson. That's not, I'm clearly proud, but mm-hmm. what's better for me is when I hear it from my own team. And we're about to embark on a really, in fact, we're marking the 3-year anniversary. Our team didn't know it, but at the beginning, one of my agreements of aligned interest with our owners, I said, wouldn't it be great to do a company-wide profit share so that everyone feels like an owner. Mm-hmm. And they agreed to that. But back then, what did they own and how much and when? And mm-hmm. It was conceptual back then, but we agreed to it. A big day. Everyone is going to share in the success of Gibson monetarily.
It's inherent that you're a good listener.
Yeah.
And that's where you learn by listening, right?
Yeah. I mean, I often say to young people who, you know, and it's kind of the way the world works is young people try to prove their experience. I said, listen, you don't have that much experience yet, but what you do have is the power to ask great questions. That's the advice I would give to anyone who's trying to figure it out is ask great questions. And I've really tried to look at myself and take that advice to myself as I don't have all the answers, but mm-hmm. collectively, if we ask the right questions to our teams internally and externally, you tend to arrive at better answers.
That's really cool. You know, what's fascinating about you is you're like normal dude.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, if you yeah. walked out of here yeah. and walked in yeah. to anywhere in town, yeah. you would just yeah. be one of the guys.
Totally.
You don't have that pompous yeah. arrogance, you know, at all. It's an antithesis of that.
Yeah. I know it's, I'm just keep going back in time, but my dad was a really awesome guy, Navy helicopter pilot. And he ended up being a very, very senior military leader from Canada. Mm-hmm. And so he was ended up being a general. And people will go, well, hold on, you said Navy and he's a general.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
he was a pilot. So in Canada, they put him in the realm of being a general in the Air Force. But he was always, his friends called him the Admiral in the Air Force, just so because he was a Navy yeah, guy through yeah. and through. But he would often say, and I would see him in front of troops and in amongst, you know, really interesting situations. And he would say, guys, never take yourself too seriously, but take what you do really seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and he would say, don't believe the highs of the highs that people talk to you about or the lows of the lows. Just, you know, stay in the middle and, mm-hmm. and be amongst the people. And I really am. I grew up that way. Mm-hmm. I'm not changing now. And I don't tolerate that around me either.
Cool.
If people's ego starts getting in the way, it gets in check really quickly. You know, when people say, oh, well, I work for JC, I correct them. I said, no, you don't. You work for Gibson. And we work together. And I really believe that. So setting that cultural dynamic where we're here in the Gibson garage, and I know everyone personally. I come up, we talk, be approachable, because when you're approachable, you get all the answers. You get unfiltered conversation to actually improve things.
Yeah.
Or a lot of times to acknowledge the success and let them know that.
That is so cool. How are we doing on time? Are you okay?
Fine. Yeah. I mean, we're in the Gibson garage, man, listening to music and seeing guitars, so it's mm-hmm. awesome.
Let's talk a moment about your other life.
Yeah.
When you punch up.
What other life? Gibson yeah. is my life. Yeah. I'm really lucky. I mean, it's, and I know you create your own luck, but I've been with my girlfriend from London giving me the guitar, who's from Canada, and 28 years later we're here in Nashville. I have a young, well, not so young family anymore, twin girls. I'm a twin and I have twin girls, so
oh, wow.
it's called Twins Revenge, and they're 16 years old and they made the move to Nashville, and my son, I have a 19-year-old son in college at Chapman University, and so family dynamic's awesome, and we love to travel. We
didn't
love to
Chapman
surf.
Do the semester at sea?
They did a few different things. Yeah, I mean, they've got such an amazing program. Their film program, their business, their music program is amazing. And he just gravitated. He's a surfer. He's a musician. It's his tribe. He loves it down there. So to see that taking place, and even last weekend we went to Parents Weekend, and you're not sure what to expect, what the kids are going to organize, but it was amazing. They really made the parents feel special, and not just the college and the university in Chapman, but the kids put on an amazing concert. My son's a musician and played some really fun music, and then they actually fed all of us, which usually we're feeding them. So, and then we're a pretty adventurous family. We have a really fun summer place in Nova Scotia, Canada, and we all go up there, and invariably the guitars come out around the bonfire, and
nice.
Lots of engagement with family and friends. And then we have a little surf shack down in Costa Rica we run to. We're a big surf family, so we get our surfing in there. And then I love, it's interesting, not just through COVID where we all had a little time to figure out a few of our passions, but one of the, we have this big fun cooking island, and I'll just, like, even last night, you know, everyone's doing what they're doing and I'm cooking, and we've got, whether it's a pizza oven or perfecting the pasta or trying something new, love doing that. And then my mom still is on this earth. She's up in Nova Scotia, Canada, so love to hang out with her and visit with her. And my dad passed away a few years ago, but it was really cool, even way before COVID and Zoom calls and all that. If you remember a thing called Skype, and, and you know, every other Friday night I would pour a Manhattan, my dad would have one, and we'd do a Skype call and just talk about life. So engaging with family, hitting adventures, traveling, and then just a few little fun areas to explore on the food front. And then my next ambition is to embark on the whole bourbon trail dynamic, you know. Mm-hmm. I've been more of a, you know, love good wine and beer, you know, all that stuff, but you're in the heart of bourbon turf here, and I think it's time for JC to hit the bourbon trail soon. Another area, just on a passion, when I finished college, university, I read a book, and one of my professors said, hey, read this book, it's pretty interesting, and it's called Our Common Future, and it was a manifesto about what needs to happen in terms of society course-correcting itself, that if the common future was a better place, and it was predominantly centered around climate dynamics and sustainability. Just the title, just forget what's in the book, like, what is our common future? And certainly there's uncommon futures for individuals, but collectively, and that stuck with me. So I've always been highly engaged. I was on the Waterkeeper Alliance, which is really an amazing organization that basically is a self-serving organization to the community to clean up the waterways in and around you, where you can restore the faith in a community through fresh water. I've been on that journey for now probably 20 years, and to see how far the Waterkeeper Alliance has come, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of waterkeepers around the world, all with a common cause of access to fresh water for swimming, for fishing, for drinking, and it's just such a simple purpose.
You alluded to university kids, college kids today, and I kind of intuit that you see the same thing I do, is very impressed and so proud of college kids, university kids today. Yeah. It gives us hope for the future. Do you agree with that?
I do agree. I think, you know, it'll be really interesting coming out of this sort of pandemic dynamic where, you know, none of us have been here before, you know, and so it's new territory. And you know, as I talk to a lot of young folks, and they say, oh, well, what about us? Guys, the question you're going to be asked probably, and I think it's the appropriate question, whether it's next year or in 3 years, is like, hey, you were part of that, you know, pandemic dynamic and COVID. What's your story? Mm-hmm. Were you a victim or a victor? Did you persevere through it? What did you do? And of course, it's very real. It's a crisis and health matters, but it's amazing the outlook that this next generation has. It would be very easy to be skeptical.
Right.
It would be easy to be angry. It would be easy to give up. Mm-hmm. And whether you're giving up on climate or politics or economy or your community, you know, it's not just don't give up, it's lean in.
Right.
And I'm watching these kids lean in with solutions and dynamics that, quite frankly, they never knew were coming.
And how about you? You've navigated through the midst of the storm.
Yeah.
Hopefully we're coming out.
Yeah.
What reset changes in your thinking have occurred?
I think that, you know, we are on to a new norm, for sure. And, you know, I think a year and a half ago, I declared a really, really simple mantra. And I said, let's plan for impact, but prepare for the future. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just words. Impact was real. This COVID, our factories were shut, our dealers were shut. And so we implemented this thing called Operation Gap, the Gibson Agility Plan. Said, let's just be highly agile. That was planning for impact. And then preparing for the future, we said, look, we're going to get through this. And when we do, there's probably new norms are going to be set. Let's not just wait for the new norms to get set and then follow them. Let's be the new norm trendsetter. And so what does that look like today? Fast forward just a year and a half later, we built the Gibson Garage. It's right here in Nashville. And when people say, well, what's new in Nashville? You go, the Gibson Garage. It's a 10,000 square foot Gibson experience where you can explore the past, present, and future of Gibson. You can play every guitar in here. And at the same time, you can shop. And whether you're a guitarist or not, there's a music connection here.
Speaking of that connection with music and guitar and the regular person, your publicist, I think in LA, called me the other day, and she was telling me about this new app you have.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. That sounds so cool.
But there it is. So, you know, whether it's a physical place you can come into, like the Gibson Garage, we created an app, and I mean, everyone's sitting, you know, at home or on their phone and expects something to come through their smartphone, which is fine. And so we created the Gibson app. It's got a tuner on it, so no-brainer, a really good tuner. But it's also got a learning tool, which is augmented reality. So it can help you learn to play
and start to play. It listens to you play, right?
Exactly. And you can sound pretty good pretty quickly on the app. It also it has Gibson TV, so you can be entertained. We've got hundreds of hours of Gibson TV on there.
How does somebody access that app?
You just go to the Gibson site, download it, and I think when you buy a guitar, it's three months free, and then after that, it's a subscription. But it's we're seeing that anyone, whether you're an artist or you're a beginner, the app, you can also...
Is it applicable for a ukulele too?
It could be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely could be. And I think what we're finding is that, you know, we started with guitar, but whether it's bass guitar, ukulele, or whether it's even any other stringed instrument, there's always common denominators mm-hmm. in there. So we did the Gibson Garage, we did the Gibson app. We also launched Gibson TV, mm-hmm. and we launched Gibson Records. Wow. And the first single came out on Gibson Records 2 weeks ago with Slash and the Conspirators. It's awesome. It's called The River is Rising. And we shot the video for it with the Gibson TV crew.
In-house.
Yeah. Wow. So when we look forward, and, you know, this is sort of big picture, like music instruments is equipment. It's what you right. use to create sound. We also brought Mesa Boogie, the amplifier company, into the family earlier this year. So now we have guitar amp combinations. But looking forward, people are going to want experiences and they're going to be entertained. And so we, by definition, should be part of that. So, yes, we have guitars and we have amps and everything you need to create the sound, but we've now got an app, we've got Gibson TV, we've got Gibson Records, and we've got the Gibson Garage, which are all part of experiences.
How cool. You know what? I'm going to have to come back because
sure.
we only got to
sure.
chapter one
sure.
in
sure.
JC's journey.
Yeah. yeah. It's been a good journey.
How cool.
Lots more to do. I mean, I would tell everyone, like, we started off, and I started by declaring, let's be the 130-year-old startup. Let's draw on our amazing, iconic past mm-hmm. as the 130 years, but let's have the mentality of a startup, which is basically future-focused, energized, innovative again. I think we're getting that balance right.
JC, what a wonderful morning, man.
Cool, man.
Thank you so much for sharing.
Absolutely. Thanks for your time, and thanks for... just hanging out in the Gibson Garage with us.
Yeah, this has been awesome.
Awesome.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Nashville, Tennessee. We'll see you here.
Support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities, such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives. And Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
Well, I'll be turning 33 next Friday morning. Friday morning 15 years ago, my grandfather called me to his bedside, and he told me there was something I should know. He said, don't stray too far from the land, boy. The land will one day set you free. When the cities all are dying, the folks up there are crying, the land will save you, wait and see. So I loaded up my car and moved to Denver to work a job and chase big city dreams. But I never found the life I really wanted till I came back home to Leaper's Fork, Tennessee. He said, don't stray too far from the land, boy. The land will one day set you free. When the cities all are dying, the folks up there are crying, the land will save you, wait and see. It didn't hit me quite as hard then as those words come through today. But in the chaos all around me, I can still hear Grandpa say, don't stray too far from the land, boy. The land will one day set you free. When the cities all are dying, the folks up there crying, the land will save you, wait and see.